Good evening, everyone. I'm Lino Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Guess what? Some diseases can really sneak up on you, and some of them are very serious, but they present no symptoms. That's the worst part, and you get no warning at all. And that's right, some serious and even life-threatening conditions can be overlooked if you are not taking active charge of your health with regular medical checkups and screenings. So on the program today, we will look at some of these conditions and what we can do to be better aware and even prevent them. Joining us for more on the subject from New York is Dr. Christine Horner. She's a health expert and award-winning author of the book Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty. Dr. Horner, welcome to the program.
Thank you. And just to let you know, I actually live in San Diego.
San Diego, that's right, yeah. Dr. Horner. You haven't moved since last time we talked.
No.
That's right, you are in San Diego. All right. So listen, yeah. I really like the title of your book, Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty. I'll pay anything for that, right? So we'll talk more about your book, but today we also want to talk about some of the sicknesses that kind of creep up on people and don't present necessarily some signs. And you really talk about the fact that we have to pay attention. So let's start with some of the potentially life-threatening health conditions that have no symptoms at all. What can you tell us? What are some of them?
Sure. So, a lot of times we feel fine, right? So it's
yes.
Like, why would you go to the doctor?
That's
so
right.
As it turns out, there's actually a lot of different diseases. In fact, some of the ones that are the most common ones that mm-hmm. are responsible for killing the most Americans, we'll say, that usually start out with absolutely no symptoms. So high blood pressure is one of them. Sexually transmitted diseases, unfortunately, the mm-hmm. HPV virus, which can cause cervical cancer, pancreatic cancer, and diabetes, and also something called sleep apnea.
Mm.
So those are some of the common ones. Like I said, all of them start out with no symptoms. So, for example, if we start with high blood pressure, it's even called the silent killer because, again, you just don't even know unless you go get your blood pressure checked. And actually, the recommendation is that you should get your blood pressure checked at least once a year and, preferably seeing your doctor once a year for a checkup. But, of course, they have blood pressure, cuffs set up in pharmacies, at the drugstores you can check. And, mm-hmm. and you can actually buy one. They're really inexpensive. I got one on Amazon for $20. So you can, check your blood pressure at home, too, to see. Now, in the past, it was always kind of the guidelines that we used. It was 140 over 90. Anything above that was considered high blood pressure. And last year, the American Heart Association actually dropped that number to 130 over 80.
Wow. So, but does it depend on the age and gender? Are these factors that can also be taken into consideration when checking the blood pressure?
Well, there's all sorts of things that actually, will go into it. But in general, like I said, no matter how old you are or what gender you are, they're saying that anything above 130 over 80 is, considered high blood pressure. So everything that we'll talk about today, the good news, I'm not on here to scare people. But actually, all of these conditions are things that have been shown to be associated with diet and lifestyle.
Wow.
And so we actually can do a lot to prevent getting these diseases in the first place. And if we have them, there's some reversibility to it, mm-hmm. As well. So, for high blood pressure, we know that people who are overweight, too.
Yeah. And, we're going to talk more about, of course, some of the factors and how to prevent them. I find it fascinating that our lifestyle has so much impact on our health. And it seems like it's something that we need to reiterate. A lot of people are still not very cognizant of that. The way we eat, the way we live, doing exercise every morning, even sleeping a lot at night can help us in preventing some sicknesses, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely true. And I think most people are just kind of like unconscious, you know, about
yes.
it. And particularly the way Americans eat. I mean, we have the worst food ever. All of our junk foods and processed foods that are high in salt and sugar. I mean,
okay.
those things just all they do is cause disease. I mean, they're not health foods, you know,
yes.
in any way. And there's a lot of people still smoking, even though we know that that's, you know, unbelievably deadly, you know, to your health, and not exercising. I mean, this is a conversation that's been going on for decades about how important it is to move your body on, you know, on a daily basis. And, you know, as you mentioned, also getting plenty of rest and then stress, you know, is another thing that we know that has a huge contribution to virtually every disease that you can think of. You know, stress is something that plays a huge role, and particularly with, you know, high blood pressure. So thousands of years ago in cultures like traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, they recognized that stress played a huge role in creating disease, and so they came up with what I now call effective stress-reducing techniques, which are meant to be practiced every day. So I actually practice a technique called transcendental meditation every day, but, you know, from India, and some meditation is, you know, one of those forms. In traditional Chinese medicine, we've all seen pictures of all those people out in the courtyards in the morning practicing Tai Chi or Qigong, you know, yoga. So the point of what they found with these techniques is if you practice them every single day, and they don't have to be that long, so the meditation is just 20 minutes twice a day, it's not, you know, that much, that what it does is it retrains your nervous system to not be as responsive when you have stress that occurs in your life, and we all have stress every single day. I mean, there's just, you know, no way to get around it. So your body just doesn't produce as much cortisol, which is that stress hormone that can be really damaging and causes your blood pressure to go up and your blood sugar to go up, and if it stays, you know, chronically elevated. So for sure you want to do that. And then there's simple practices that they found, too, that if you just, when you wake up in the morning, if you just think about the things that you're grateful for in your life, like five things, that actually affects you, you know, for the rest of your day. It affects your attitude and it affects your blood pressure. So you know, and the reason you don't want high blood pressure is because it really increases your risk of heart disease and strokes and kidney disease.
Yeah, and one thing that is very important that you mentioned, you talked about the diet in America where there's high level of sugar and salt, and that these are contributing factors to high blood pressure. The World Health Organization is also sounding the alarm on the fact that high blood pressure and other non-communicable diseases is in the increase, not just in in a country like the United States, but even in sub-Saharan Africa, we see a high rate of high blood pressure. And urbanization has been listed as one of the reasons, change in diet and stress also. So it's not just an American problem. It's not just a problem in the West.
Right.
It's definitely a global problem.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes,
yeah.
It's a global problem. So let's talk about some of the risk factors. I know you mentioned the diet. You talked about obesity at some point, and you talked about exercise, how it's important.
So the opposite, not exercising, staying up too late at night, having lots of stress in your life, and eating junk foods. I mean, that's your recipe for getting not only blood pressure, but virtually every chronic disease.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so now you suggested that we get a device to check our blood pressure. Is it something that everyone has to have, or those people who are at risk, so-called at risk of blood pressure?
Well, you know, the recommendation is that you should get your blood pressure checked once a year at a minimum, and if you have any elevation in it, then I think it's really important for you to get one of these blood pressure cuffs. And again, this automated, you know, ones that they have now are like $20, so they're really affordable. And that way you can kind of keep tabs of your blood pressure, you know, yourself. I mean, that's really the safest thing to do. But if you don't want to do that, you can go into the drugstore, like I said, and, you know, a lot of drugstores have places where you can measure your blood pressure too.
Mm-hmm. And who is at risk of high blood pressure, or it's pretty much everyone across the board that is at risk?
Well, yeah, being a human being.
Well, that's comforting.
If you ate junk foods, if you're overweight, you don't exercise, I mean, those are the things. So, I mean, obviously, if you're doing all the healthy things right, I mean, your risk of developing, you know, cardiovascular disease is very low. In fact, they found that people who practice transcendental meditation, you know, the form that I practice twice a day, there's an 87% reduction in cardiovascular disease if you practice this simple mental technique. So, you know, it's just an important thing for everybody.
So meditation, something really to get yourself focused and out of calm place, I guess, maybe once a day or twice a day? What would you suggest?
Yeah,
how much time?
Well, I mean, the recommendation is 20 minutes twice a day for the form of meditation that I do. And again, it trains your nervous system to not be as responsive, so you don't get the, you know, those cortisol levels so high. Yeah.
Okay, so these are some alternative approaches that people can do. Now, you talked about HPV. You know, HPV is tricky because when we hear about it, we associate women, young women, with this virus. We also hear that men can be at risk of HPV, and we also know that there is an increase in the infection of in people, especially the younger population is getting more and more infected with HPV. Tell us more about that.
Sure. So HPV stands for human papillomavirus. It's the most common sexually transmitted disease. In fact, the estimate is that 70% of people who are sexually active will at some point in time be in contact with HPV. And this is why they're, you know, recommending doing the vaccines on young kids, basically, 11, 12 years old before they're sexually active, because once they get exposed to it, you can't give the vaccine. It actually makes the situation worse. But the problem with it is that it's been associated with cervical cancer. In fact, when they, you know, check the cells in cervical cancer, like 99.9% of them have HPV virus in it. So they think that there's, you know, a very strong, you know, link with that. Now, what's not commonly known is that if you are healthy, and again, all the things that we talked about, you know, to do to be healthy, that then your immune system is nice and strong. Okay. And they actually found that in 98% of the cases, the virus goes away on its own, 98% of the time. So it's like, oh, really? Do we need a vaccine for 2%?
Some people ask that question, but
well, you know, and so here, I mean, here's the interesting thing. It's like before, we had absolutely no effective treatment for it other than, you know, in women, there's nothing you can do with men. You can't even really test them, which makes it even more challenging. But with women, you know, we use pap smears. And that's been really effective. It's actually dropped the incidence of cervical cancer by 70% since pap smears were, commonly done. But, you know, what their recommendation is then they're just checking you, and if they see any abnormal cells, then they're going to start treating you topically with chemicals or surgery, and that stuff is not fun. But there's no effective medications with Western medicine. So what's real exciting is that there's some new research, which is out of the University of Texas Health Sciences, where they used this mushroom formula out of Japan, which is called AHCC. And AHCC has been around for decades. It's well known in Japan as the most effective formula in helping to support the immune system. In fact, they even prescribe it in the hospitals in Japan. Particularly for cancer patients because survival statistics are so much better. But so what this researcher did was to check the effectiveness of AHCC, this mushroom formula, against that HPV virus. And so she found that it actually killed the virus, and so then she set up this clinical trial where she tested it in women who had the chronic HPV infection. And again, like I said, only 2% of people go on to get it, but once you get it, there's no effective Western treatment. So she put these women on AHCC for 6 months or longer. And she found that the women who stayed on it for 6 months or longer, that it completely eradicated the HPV virus in the vast majority. And then they've done follow-up studies to show that the HPV virus stayed away. So it wasn't like it went into some dormant, you know, phase and then came back. It stayed away. So they're doing a bigger clinical trial now too.
Okay, so that's a promising research.
So until
there is more out there to treat HPV, experts recommend the vaccine, which have shown to be effective in preventing some forms of HPV virus. And it's interesting because, again, like I mentioned earlier, HPV is not just an issue with girls, with women. Men are at risk as well.
Well, sure, because they're the ones who give it to the women, right?
Okay.
It's a sexually transmitted disease.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you can't really test for it in men. So, I mean, that creates a huge challenge, you know, for us. But to me, I mean, this is another thing where we find, okay, if it goes away 98% of the time, how about we, you know, this is another, you know, reason why you want to stay as healthy as you can and just know that, you know, you've got a simple mushroom formula that doesn't have any side effects. It just has side benefits, you know, with helping your immune system that is highly effective in getting rid of it. Yeah, even
all
if
right.
you get that chronic infection, yeah.
Okay, Dr. Hone. So we are going to take a short break, and we will continue this very interesting discussion. So don't go away, Dr. Horner, and our listeners, stick around. We'll be right back with Dr. Christine Horner. It's now time for the news with Camila.
Thank you, Lenore. The World Health Organization says Africans are living longer and healthier lives. Healthy life expectancy on the continent rose from 44.4 years at the turn of the century to 53.8 years in 2015. Overall life expectancy climbed from 50.8 years to 61.2. Death rates from non-communicable diseases have remained steady since 2000, while the other top 10 causes of mortality in Africa have fallen by 40%. Deaths from diarrheal disease, respiratory infections, and HIV have decreased. But the WHO warns that the millions on the continent still face the challenge of chronic diseases and chronic conditions such as cancer and heart disease are claiming more lives. The WHO says health services in Africa have been slow to adapt to the new health challenges. A study released recently says in the next decade, breast cancer cases could double in Africa if action is not taken. Researchers at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland examined a total of 41 previous studies across 22 African countries. They found that rates of breast cancer are likely to increase in the region amid population growth, unhealthy lifestyles, poor health infrastructure, and lack of education for women. The team suggests that the trend could be halted if data collection and patient registration were improved. Cancer is a leading cause of illness and death among women around the world, and young African women are twice as likely to die from breast cancer than those in high-income countries, according to the study. And that's a wrap-up of the latest health news. Back to you, Lenore.
And that was the news with Camila Tom. Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are looking at ways to prevent some health conditions that can show no early signs. And our guest is Dr. Christine Horner. She is a health expert and award-winning author of the book Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty. Now, Dr. Horner, one of the other diseases that you talked about is diabetes. Of course, a lot of time when we hear awareness and messaging around blood pressure, diabetes kind of follows right behind or is with blood pressure. So tell us about why there is still the need to raise awareness against diabetes when it's been around for so long and we've heard so much about it, just like blood pressure, really.
Right, you know, and because our diet and lifestyle is so bad, I mean, there's been like a 90% increase in diabetes in the last, you know, couple of decades, so that's why we're hearing about it so much. And in fact, for people that are more than 65 years old, 25% of people over the age of 65 have diabetes. I mean, it's truly an epidemic, and most of it is diabetes type 2. There's, you know, a couple different types. Type 1 is more of, we think, maybe an infection or autoimmune disease kind of a thing. It's different. But type 2, which is 90%, is pretty much all diet and lifestyle related. And again, eating junk foods, you know, being overweight, not getting enough exercise, eating sugar, it's, you know, it's all the same, you know, kind of thing. Now, the good news is that diabetes is pretty much completely preventable. And if you do have it, you know, you can really reverse this when you improve your diet and lifestyle. And just to show you how simple it can be.
So before we continue, when you say diabetes is preventable, it depends on the type of diabetes, right?
That's I'm talking about type 2.
Yeah, type 2 diabetes.
Type 2 is completely preventable. So, yeah, so it can be extremely simple to do this. And here's an example. So they've actually found that there's a very strong link between diabetes type 2 and your vitamin D levels. So there's huge amounts of research that's being done on vitamin D, and we've now realized that it works in the body more like a hormone. It's essential for every cell to function properly, and when it's low, which is estimated to be low in about 80% of people, so most people are low, then it really increases your risk of a lot of different diseases, from cancers to neurological things like multiple sclerosis, and it strongly increases your risk of diabetes. So there was many studies that they've done, actually, but a recent one that was just maybe a couple of months ago, is they found that as your levels of vitamin D go up, there's almost like a linear relationship. Your risk of diabetes goes down. So if you have your vitamin D levels in that therapeutic range, which ideally kind of high therapeutic is 50 to 60 nanograms per deciliter, so and just remember 50 to 60, you can have up to an 80% reduction in the risk of diabetes. I mean, it's unbelievable. So it's as simple as taking a vitamin D supplementation, which all the experts are saying everybody needs to be doing that, at least 2,000 international units a day, and some people need a lot more, and the only way you know how much you need is to actually get your levels checked.
Yeah,
so you can either go to your doctor's office for that, or there's actually a kit that you can get from the Internet from a website called NutrientPower.org. We have lots of great information on that site, but basically it's a 501c3 organization that is really focusing on certain nutrients like vitamin D, omega-3 fatty acids, and a few other ones to see what the relationship is between the levels in the body and what your risk is of various different kinds of diseases. So you can order this kit from their website, comes to your house, has instructions, but basically you're pricking your finger, putting a little dot of blood on a piece of paper, sending it in, and then they'll let you know what your levels are. And then you can adjust them accordingly. And the recommendation is to actually recheck this every 6 months so you can kind of stay on top of it.
Okay. So we have a global audience, and not everyone will be able to have access to the kit. So how do you then go a different way in case you don't have
your
access?
Doctor.
Yeah. And in what naturally, how can you have your vitamin D? How can you consume your vitamin D?
Well,
naturally.
You just take supplements, you know, is what you have to do. So it's recommended.
Can you find it in any food at all?
Sure. Well,
okay.
You know, you can find vitamin D in mushrooms, is kind of one of the major sources of it, but you just can't consume enough of it, you know, to get your levels therapeutic. Now, your skin will manufacture, you know, vitamin D. So people who live in places like San Diego and love to be outside, like me, you can. You can, you know, I can get my levels up really high just, you know, because I get so much sun exposure, but the vast majority of people do not. If you have dark skin, we know for sure that that's something that actually causes your vitamin D levels to be lower because, you know, you're protected from the sun,
naturally.
But it decreases the manufacturing of vitamin D in your skin. So you know, having dark skin is something that generally, people have more of an issue with having low vitamin D levels, and it's really important to take supplements. Yeah,
interesting. I say it's interesting because, for example, I'm from Sub-Saharan Africa, and many areas in Africa, it's very sunny, and people are outside, so they get their sun exposure. But at the same time, when you say that, if you are dark skinned, that could be also a factor in decreasing the level of vitamin D. It's really interesting to know that, because sometimes we just don't know.
Right.
You think I'm outside, so I'm getting all the sun I need. However, your pigmentation can, which in a way helps against the sun exposure, can also play against receiving your vitamin D. So,
Okay,
it's interesting to know that. Now, let me ask you, I'm sorry, did you want to say something? Okay, so let me ask you this about, we talked earlier about high blood pressure, and we have a question from a listener who is asking, what are some of the side effects of taking blood pressure medication? I know there is no precision in terms of what medication, but I guess people are concerned about side effects when they take medication, and always we look at other ways, as you gave some advice about ways that we can fight high blood pressure. It's just a general concern about side effects.
Sure. Well, you know, every drug has its own kind of unique side effects with it. And so, you know, you can just, whatever drug's being prescribed to you, you definitely want to look it up and see what the various side effects are. And usually what we find is that there's lots of different side effects that affect all sorts of different systems, you know, in the body. And so, you know, my approach really is like, try to not go on pharmaceutical medications because they all got side effects. If you can, by staying healthy, you know. So of course, if you get diagnosed with high blood pressure, you know, you've got to go on medications until you, but if you do your, you know, improvements in your diet and lifestyle, then, you know, you're going to be able to go off of that medication, ideally.
Okay, ideally.
So, you know, that's another thing was just like, you're right. I mean, all medications have side effects, and they vary from, you know, minor things to major things. And so, you know, if you keep yourself super healthy, your likelihood of needing pharmaceutical medications is greatly reduced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because some people are really... They are really stuck to, well, not stuck to, because as you said, according to what you're saying, there are always ways to find an exit from drugs when it comes to high blood pressure. However, some people have to take their medication. They have to take it, and they have to take it for a long time. So I guess the concern is there. And if you take the treatment for a long time, what could be the side effect of staying on a medication for a while?
Right, and like I said, you know, they're all different, and so you just have to, you know, look it up. I mean, the Internet actually is a good source for that to say, okay, well, you know, this particular drug is, you know, the kind of common ones could be dizziness or headaches or fatigue or low blood pressure when you're first, you know, standing up, and then it can go to, you know, more severe things, like sometimes it can affect your kidneys, or sometimes, you know, it can affect your sexual function, and sometimes, you know, so... There's, like I said, you just got to look it up and see, but, you know.
So let's talk about some of the telltale signs. I know earlier in my introduction I say that the condition we'll talk about today, they can creep up on you. You may not be aware that you have
it.
But you can get to some point where you start to ask yourself questions like, maybe should I check, can I see a doctor? Should I think about seeing a doctor? What are some of the telltale signs for high blood pressure, for example? When should somebody start really thinking about seeing a doctor?
Well, this is the whole point of this conversation. You need to see a doctor every year to check, because you don't have any symptoms. And when you start having symptoms, you know,
it means it's a
serious thing. I mean, it's obviously, if you're going to have symptoms with high blood pressure, then you're really in trouble. So, I mean, that could be lightheadedness or headaches and that kind of thing. But the whole point of this is, like, go see your doctor, stay on top of stuff, and, you know, we can help to prevent this stuff from happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all right, and we're going to wrap up in a minute or so. But before we wrap, I wanted you to kind of give us a sense of, you know, just to summarize some basic steps to living healthier and just to being aware about our health every day. What would you recommend us to do, just in a nutshell?
Sure. So that's the whole point of the book that I wrote, Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty, which is it actually won a National Book Award for the best book in health, medicine, and nutrition. And it's a guide to everything that you need to know in order to experience extraordinary health and longevity. So it's not, most people think about diet, you know, as the main thing, but there's many other elements that are equally important. And so we did touch on a few of those things, which, of course, is exercise, getting enough rest at night, sleep, and your sleep quality. So they found that it actually makes a big difference what time you go to bed. So before 10 o'clock is considered ideal to get the best, you know, kind of sleep. We also talk about stress and what a huge role that plays in all the various different diseases.
And, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Horner, thank you so much.
Sure.
That's all we have for today. Thanks for joining us. And that was Dr. Christine Horner, health expert and award-winning author of the book Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou in Washington. Thanks to all of you for listening in today. And for more, facebook.com/healthchat and keep the conversation going. I thank our producer, Mr. Des McKernan, and our engineer, Alfredo, and Camila with the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.